Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
In closing, I'd just like to say a special thanks to Roy Campanella and Jackie Robinson, to all the black baseball players for the sacrifices that they made and the things that they had to put up with to make the road easier for the players, the black players that are coming along today. They opened the doors. And without Jackie, Rachel, I don't know if that door would have been open again for a long, long time. That man, I know I couldn't have put up with what he put up with. And if that door hadn't stayed open and it was closed, I know for many, many years it would have been closed to us. And I just want all the black players, wherever they are, to know that I appreciate what they did for me to make it possible for me to play in the major leagues.
The great Frank Robinson, while being inducted into the Hall of Fame, his speech in 1982, one of the great players in the history of Major League Baseball, an MVP in both leagues, a World Series MVP, a Triple Crown Award winner, and the first African-American manager in Major League Baseball history. Tom Boswell knew Frank Robinson well, covered him in multiple markets, and he joins us now to discuss the life and the legacy of Frank Robinson, who left us too soon at 83 years old yesterday. Tom, thanks for a couple of minutes. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Why don't we start with just, and when you found out that he had passed, what are some of the first emotions that ran through you?
Actually, I found out that he was supposed to pass away maybe 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, and I got a call from an editor and said, we need an appreciation. Frank is really near the end. And I said to the editor, I think death's going to have a tough time with Frank. This might take a while. And I wrote a lead saying that the death might have a hard time when Frank decided to dig in. And so since then, there were reports that Frank had not only not passed away, but had given an interview. And so when he did pass away yesterday, I'd had quite a bit of time to think about it and digest it. But it did seem just right to me that he hung in. He crowded the plate on death for 10 extra days.
What will you remember most about him, Tom? Just whether as a player, as a manager, just the character. Again, I think your piece is wonderful, encapsulating the man. I mean, I know it's hard in one story, one column to do so. But what will the legacy be for you?
I think that you played the perfect clip before this segment, and when he said, "I couldn't have put up with what he put up with." Speaking of Jackie Robinson. I grew up, Bill Russell, the Boston Celtics basketball player, was my favorite athlete then. I think he probably still is now. And Frank Robinson was one of Bill Russell's high school basketball teammates. That must have been some high school team. And I always thought that it was, it really resonated that Bill Russell was the first African-American professional coach in any sport, and that 8 years later, Frank became the first African-American coach in baseball. And that they could be so intent on pushing for social progress, and yet they both did it. They were absolutely honest. They were absolutely self-confident and dignified, but they also were their entire selves. Jackie Robinson constantly had to turn the other cheek. Everyone said it damaged his health to have to be yelled at and insulted and put up with everything he put up with. And both Bill Robinson and Bill Russell and Frank Robinson, they could be themselves, their whole selves, or very close to it. And I thought that Frank was that next step in the civil rights movement through sports. And I thought that was an enormously important legacy. He never forgot it. It's a good reminder today of the what social progress looked like back then, and a reminder of why it's worth battling to keep and extend now. Frank always had that really severe comportment, a hard eye for enemies, and a basic sense of right and wrong that you expect in a pioneer. And I wrote this morning that when he walked into a room, everyone else stood up straighter and held their heads higher. But now it's time for us all to bow our heads in respect for him for a moment.
Tom Boswell of the Washington Post, revered writer, not just on baseball, but all over the gamut here in town on Grant and Danny. You know, the headline for your story was the proudest, orneriest, most competitive man in baseball. He really was simultaneously kind of warm-hearted and also a guy that would go after you if you asked him a question he didn't like at the same time. How did he walk that balance? He's a complicated guy.
He challenged everyone. He said that he wanted to find out if others could be intimidated. If you could be intimidated, then he would intimidate you. He was crusty. I think it was lucky for me that I had been on the baseball beat probably for 6 or 8 years before I ran into him, so I wasn't a rookie. I still remember one of the first good talks we had. I wrote a column that said the first three hitters in the Baltimore Orioles lineup ought to all be benched for different reasons. And I said that I was particularly hard on Fred Lynn, who had been the most valuable player several years before. I said, firemen go into burning buildings for $10,000 a year. For $1 million a year, Fred Lynn won't pinch hit with the bases loaded in Yankee Stadium if he has a cold. Well, Freddie got all mad, wouldn't talk to the press, but he also got hot and was American League Player of the Week. So I came back over, and I'm standing by the batting cage, and Frank, who's a coach then under Earl Weaver, kind of sidles up over to me, and we haven't talked much in the past, and he just said, psst, psst, and I turn around, and he said, could you rip Freddie again next week? He was always, he was always the most candid about players that he had liked and admired, or those he had no use for. He just despised the PED players who, whenever somebody would pass would pass Ernie Banks on the home run list, or would approach him, or God forbid, passed Hank Aaron, he was just scathing. I mean, he was one of those who helped me and others understand. Look, this is cheating. Really, really cheating, and breaking our records doing this is wrong, and he just had no use for him. There was another story. Somebody once asked him what he thought about Gary Carter's induction into the Hall of Fame. Gary Carter was a very good catcher, and he said, "Gary Carter." Oh, he said, "What do you think about Carter being a Hall of Famer?" And he said, there's a difference between a Hall of Famer and being in the Hall of Fame. Gary Carter is in the Hall of Fame. So, when you're tough on Hall of Famers, you know he'll be tough on rest. I remember one time I had gotten on his managing. He was very old school, and you know, he was just way behind anything in analytics or stuff like that. He compensated it for with amazing leadership skills. But I covered him when he was manager of the Orioles, and later when he was manager with the Nats. I think it was probably when he was managing the Orioles. I wrote a piece just criticizing his managing, and the next day when you rip him, you always come to the ballpark the next day, and I'm by the cage again, and Frank comes by me, and he makes this big sweeping gesture with his right hand, and like he's stabbing himself in the back with a knife, and he doesn't stop. There's no joke. He just glared at me, just kept right on going.
Oh wow,
that's intimidating.
He's like, I saw it. You just need to know that I saw it.
FYI, I read it.
Yep. I read it. I'll remember it. You backstabber, you. So anyway.
Tom, the contrast to me, though, and this is the thing I'll remember most about. I'm too young to remember him playing, unfortunately. But my dad would speak about him so glowingly, especially his time in Baltimore. But as a manager, as tough and demanding and competitive, looking to fight Mike Socha, a guy half his age, and, you know, and a brick house, I will never, ever forget the Matt LaCroix incident. And the tears that he shed. As you mentioned, again, you captured it so perfectly in his piece. But the dichotomy, the contrast that broke him, that seemed to like break his heart having to do that. Can you go into that?
Yes, LaCroix was a journeyman ball player, but a good one. He'd had a long career, had to battle for everything, and they played him at catcher against a team that ran constantly. I think LaCroix was sort of out of position and maybe had some arm problems. Anyway, they stole 7 bases on him in one game, and there may have been a couple of pass balls in there too. And before the game was over, Frank replaced him in the middle of an inning. That you would almost never see that happen. If Frank Robinson had been pulled out of right field in the middle of an inning, I don't know what would have happened in the dugout. And Frank, after the game, someone asked him about taking the crowd in the middle of the inning. And Frank started to talk about how horrible it made him feel and that he didn't want that to happen to anyone. And he started to cry, talking about how bad he felt for LaCroix, for a real pro to be humiliated like that. And we asked LaCroix about it, and he said, "Oh, don't worry, my dad would have done the same thing."
Yeah.
So, but Frank was very, on one of the teams he managed, there was a guy who was so just sort of an emotional mess, tough life, that his nickname among teammates was Tripolar. And Frank sought him out and became his best friend, confidant, and just helped him enormously. And where others in baseball can really be harsh and treat serious things like that as something funny, Frank treated it as something real and made a real effort to help that guy and did.
Tom, I think if he walked by you behind the cage today, he'd pat you on the back, not make that gesture. It was a heck of a piece, and I'm sure he would have enjoyed it. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much for the stories.
Good deal. You got it.
Tom Boswell of the Washington Post here on Grant and Danny. A terrific read. Barry Svrluga's story on Robinson yesterday was spectacular as well. Just really all across the board, the Post sports staff. And you could tell they were, he said, we were tipped off a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've been prepping these. And if you like baseball in this town, Frank Robinson meant a lot to Washington, D.C. baseball. Because
this,
after
this
33
region, yeah.
years, he was the manager when this team came back to D.C. But before that, most of us were Orioles fans. He's responsible for one of those championships that they have in a year that he won the Triple Crown and was incredible.
He was great. He was great. And that even extends, not necessarily his acumen as a manager, making a move here or there. Who cares about that? But there's an austerity to him. There's a greatness to the man for what he accomplished, what he persevered through, and what he demanded of people. I mean, there's still so many guys that speak so glowingly. I know Ryan Zimmerman is still was close with him. They would talk in the offseason. They'd have lunch together. They have phone conversations, you know, every other month or so. Just an amazing man.
The Cavaliers are in town tonight to play the Wizards. It'll be their first game since they reshaped their roster. No more Porter or Markieff Morris. Let's get into the Wizards next. Ernie Grunfeld did a bunch of interviews yesterday. He said some things that, well, they don't make a lot of sense. We'll get into those on Grant and Danny.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Wanted to remind people before we get into the Wizards that I'll be in Gaithersburg this weekend, 6 p.m., Sunday, February 10th, two days out.
Cool thing you're doing.
Really, really, really neat, and I'm excited to be a part of it. The Valentine's Day holiday comes up, and a lot of times, and that's, for a lot of us, a cool time, a great time, but for a lot of people, you can get down in the dumps. They're doing a really neat thing. So there is a young man on social media. Many of you know him. His name's Austin Pirine. Not Samaje, but Austin. He goes by President Pirine. He wants to be a president, at President Pirine. Check him out. He's on a global mission to feed the homeless. He started this when he was a toddler. He's 5 years old. His mission is called Show Love. It's the hashtag Show Love movement. So this event is at 6 p.m. I'm going to be introducing him and, I believe, asking him some questions on stage with him a little bit. But there's all kinds of other cool things going on, including Smooches from Pooches, where they got canines coming for a kissing booth and therapy dogs there, and it's all going to benefit great causes, including the Montgomery County Humane Society, Open Book Chocolates, Touch of Orion's Belt. So really, really neat thing. You want to leave feeling better than you feel when you show up? You want to do something that gives you a little faith restored in humanity? Come on out to the Show Love event with our guy, President Pirine.
Kid is a superstar.
Welcome him to the D.C. area. This is in Gaithersburg on Sunday night. And then go home, and you'll have paused the Grammys. You're DVRing it, and you can skip through all the crap that you don't want to watch. So I'm helping you enjoy the Grammys more than you would otherwise.
The Grammys are on Sunday?
I believe they are.
Wow.
I believe it's a big Grammys night coming up. You know I'm award show Paulson.
I do know that about you.
Oscar's right around the corner. I watch the Grammys because for the same reasons. I like watching all the celebrities all dressed up, the beards perfectly manicured, the chicks in their dresses, and the red carpet. And I also like the live performances. There's normally three or four that stink and one or two that are great every single year. So my thing now is that I've gotten smarter about just DVRing it, fast forwarding, skipping around to the things I want to watch.
Which is a good play. For me, I just don't know who anyone is. And I can't care when I don't know who anyone is.
I don't think that's true. I think you'd be surprised. Most of the time at the Grammys, at least two, sometimes more performances are paying homage to legends of the past. The music that you love and do care about.
Right.
It's generally not a bunch of people that are famous right now that you haven't heard of performing. There's going to be some of that. But again, that's why I want you to be able to skip around and hop through the stuff you don't care about. Also, how long do you think the Oscars was last year?
4 hours.
3 hours and 53 minutes.
Yeah.
They don't have a host this year. It was supposed to have been Kevin Hart. He does everything. They wanted him to apologize for insensitive tweets using inappropriate words.
From how many years ago?
Several.
Yeah.
I think it was like 09, you know, 12, something. I don't know. Several years back. He wasn't willing to apologize. He said he's apologized enough in the past and basically lives his life differently now. And if you don't want me to host, you don't want me to host. So they had a stalemate. So he just said, no, thank you.
Which I love, by the way.
And he's continued to go on living his life. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm team Kevin Hart in that debate. But rather than replacing him, because it was semi-last minute by the standards of putting together a massive show that tens of millions of people are going to watch globally, they've decided they're not going to have a host. They're just going to have the stars present the awards and maybe do some funny skits here or there. The only thing they've come out with and said is that they're not going to just open the show and go straight to the first award. There's going to be some type of open. So everyone's fascinated to see what it's going to be because normally that's a monologue where Ricky Gervais or someone stands up on stage and just eviscerates all of these self-important actors and actresses.
The only parts of any award show that I've watched over the last however many years are the Ricky Gervais openings.
They're
to
great.
The Golden Globes.
Ellen does a really good job.
It's my favorite thing.
Billy Crystal used to do like over-the-top Broadway-type musical numbers.
Which I want to just shoot into the sun.
They're not for me. I'm not the right audience for that. My mom and dad would sit there and love that. He was supposedly one of the best Oscars hosts. Kevin Hart's a little more my speed. Ricky Gervais was really funny. I could see The Rock doing it 1 year and doing well, like go a little younger. But the point is, because they don't have a host, they're hoping that they can get this thing back down under 3 hours, which I think is a must.
It's the right idea.
If we can't have baseball games that are 2 hours and 57 minutes without people complaining, we need to not hand out awards for 4 hours. I think that's just something we can all get behind.
The easiest thing to do, but Hollywood's too self-important to do it, is to just cut out all the stuff where nobody has ever heard of any of the nominees. I don't even mean movies. I mean the like technical sound in,
right.
in a short film. I'm sure it's a big deal for like eight dudes in glasses that we never heard of.
Well, you know, though, they actually do have dozens of awards.
Oh, yeah.
Handed out the night before or sometimes before they even go live.
And they
that
do that
night.
Quick montage, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm with you. They do that. It's not like they don't already have a list of things that don't make the cut. They just need to add a lot of items to that list.
Yeah. Again, I'm available for consultation.
Here's the problem, though. It's 2019, mm-hmm. And more people get upset about not being invited to the table than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, go ahead and put the toothpaste back in the tube after you've said, you know what, and I'll just pick one randomly. The foreign films category,
right.
Where no one in your viewing audience has seen these movies that are not in the English language. We don't need to televise that here in the United States on the Oscars show. Good luck doing that. Or any of the other, like, they're adding awards. You know, it won't be long before they're doing, like, best director who's not a man. You know, you just see what I'm saying?
Sure,
like, they're
of course.
Going in this direction where everyone needs a seat at the table.
Best art direction in a television miniseries are, eliminate those immediately. Because the guy's going to get there and go, wow. I want to thank guy I don't know, guy I've never heard of,
yes.
This person that's unimportant, this person I've never met. If it doesn't include Tom Cruise, Will Smith, Sandra Bullock, Charlize Theron,
yeah.
Stop doing it.
Everything you're saying's right. It just can't happen, and it won't happen.
But I know.
That's how you get the show down to a nice, tidy 225, 230.
Oh, I'd be so good at it. We'd have a 30-minute program. 7 minutes of a monologue.
Basically volunteering to walk into the house
yep.
of someone who can't throw anything away. You are going into a hoarder's home, and they've got 17 magazines on a table from 2007 about how to fix up your bathroom, and they have no plans on fixing up their bathroom. And you're just saying, all right, those are going in the trash bag. And all you're doing is correctly saying what should go into the trash
mm-hmm.
bag. They're not going to allow you to do that. Those magazines are oh so important. They might one day, one time, need to reference one of the stories in one of those magazines. So we got to keep all the magazines.
There's a Netflix show where they do that, actually. There's a woman, it's called Tidying Up, is the show.
Well, that's a famous show for years, the Hoarders show.
Yeah, yeah. But Hoarders is famous.
TLC, yeah.
But there's this, I can't remember her name, but she's got some philosophy where it's like, if you haven't used it in like 2 days, you got to throw it away.
I am completely enamored with hoarding and hoarders. I'm not one. I'm actually the antithesis of that. I'm a minimalist.
You are great at that, by the way.
I throw away everything and never have anything. So if there's a show about people who never have what they need because they threw it in the trash, and we have to have a intervention to make sure that, hey, that text message you sent me yesterday with all the details, I've already deleted that text. Can you send it to me a third time? That's me. But I can't get enough of the people. And it is, I think it's like a psychological mental thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a disease, is not the right word. But whatever it is, they don't think like you and I think.
I know.
So go ahead and tell a hoarder you're never going to need that wrapper from the cheeseburger you just ate again. They think that one day water is going to start filling up the world and like they're going to float on that wrapper.
What
like,
if
that's
I need
in
it?
Their mind.
Now, I've got a little bit of that. Not nowhere near to that degree where I can't live in my own abode. But it's the, well, what if I need this? Like George Costanza's wallet, where he's like, I've got this receipt. What if I need it? I need to prove my purchase.
Let me see your wallet right now. Let's see what you're working with. I've got a rubber band, an actual rubber band. It's actually a hair clip or like a hair band, I guess. My wife's hair band, which is funny. But I've got my license, my debit card, the card to get in here. Card to get into the St. James and my movie theater Regal card. That's what I got.
Yeah, you've got no cash.
I got like
I've
five
got,
things.
I got credit cards, health plan.
I mean, this is so thick.
The normal thing. Yeah, like I have a human being wallet.
But it's you can't sit on that.
Sure you can.
Well, then you're tilting over.
No.
This is so big. This is 2 inches tall.
Right. It's a human's wallet. It's not like a Costanza wallet where you couldn't close it, but it's a wallet.
That's bigger than most wallets.
No, it's average.
Can we post photos of these wallets and let people judge?
Someone's going to like find some number on there and like exploit me.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put my cards next to yours, and we'll just show the difference. I'll post it at Greenwich.
Yours is a rubber band.
That's the same size as Danny's, roughly.
Is it about the same thumb? Let me see.
Danny's
might be a little
bit. I'm
going to eyeball it.
See, Dar is on my team. Dar has what most people have at this point.
No, I'm on Team Real Wallet. You're on whatever you
want. Again, you use a rubber band, and you want to claim that you're the same as Dar.
No. I'm not saying that we have the same like thing keeping our cards together. We have the same amount of things, though, which is a very thin thing that you could have at all times in any pocket, and mm-hmm. it'll never adjust how you're sitting.
I'd say mine is closer in depth to Danny's than it is to yours.
No chance.
Well, his is it's better organized. It's one of those fancy,
very well organized
things. But I've got like a normal standard human wallet where like I need to have a little bit of cash, for example. I need
case.
Credit cards, health plan cards, and that kind of stuff. You've got a rubber band around your driver's license, basically.
Essentially. It's a good way to do it. At Grant H. Paulson is where you can find the photo that I'm about to put out of the wallets. You can judge which one's more reasonable. We are Grant and Danny. Let's get into the Wizards next. First game since the trade deadline tonight. What Ernie Grunfeld told reporters yesterday about why they made the trades they did.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Grant and Danny on the Fan at Grant H. Paulson. I just posted the photo of my wallet versus Danny's. You can tell us whose is more common. CK walked in. His looks a lot like yours.
Sure, it's a man's wallet.
Dar's is exactly like if I... My wallet is the trailer park version of Dar's lovely home, but it's the exact same size.
Is there a way for you to stop calling it a wallet when it's a rubber band?
No, this is my wallet.
Because it's not a wallet. It's a rubber band around your cards. You have no cash.
That's a wallet.
It's not what a wallet is. A wallet is what I have. It's what CK has.
Right.
It's a sleeper.
But this
Brennan's
serves
cool
the purpose
one
of a wallet.
It's closer to a money clip. It's the trailer park money clip.
Yeah.
It's a rubber band.
But this is my wallet. You see what I'm saying? It's not a wallet. Mm. It's my wallet.
Man, I don't know. It's sort of like saying you have a bicycle and you're like, that's my car because I get from place to point A to point B. It's my transportation need. You
right
know, it's a rubber band around your cards. And that's fine, but it's the fact that it's just not a wallet.
By definition, definitely not a wallet.
Right.
It's a rubber band around cards, but I'm not going to say, let me go get my rubber band around cards so I can make this payment.
There's no shorthand for that.
So I'm just going to call it a wallet. But you can check it out if you want on Twitter at Grant H. Paulson. Ernie Grunfeld has done a bunch of interviews. One of the interviews he did was with The Athletic. And actually, our guy Ben, who writes on the website with Blue Shorts and Josh, asked me, he said, did you see what Ernie Grunfeld told The Athletic? I said, no, I hadn't seen that. His point to The Athletic, and he's made this same comment in a bunch of the interviews he's done, is that, yes, the John Wall injury did change everything in the plan for the Wizards, but the goal was still to compete. The goal is to be as competitive as possible. The goal is to win as much as possible right now. The big question will always be, is this a directive he's handed down from above him where he's not allowed to rebuild? He's not allowed to. Don't call it tank, because that's a very bad word around here for some reason, even though the Caps did it to get Alex Ovechkin, and that worked out pretty well. But he's not allowed to detonate. Or does he just not want to detonate, which is what I think is the case. Is it a matter of that ownership and Ted Leonsis says you can't do this, or is it that he doesn't want to do it? I don't know. But what I do know is he told Candace Buckner of the Washington Post that they could have traded Otto Porter for a first-round pick.
And the concern, and this is where Wizards fans should be really excited, was so that the Wizards this calendar year could be under the luxury tax. Raise the banner, right? Get that up in the arena.
Are you under
Big
the tax,
night.
Baby?
Huge night. If you're in Section 106, guess what? Your team is under the luxury tax. Get your season tickets now. Get excited, baby. Oh, that's awesome. What an awesome deal for fans. Championship. He literally is walking around proud of the fact they got under the luxury tax. They said we couldn't do it. They said it was not to be done, and we did it. This is embarrassing. They don't have a second-round pick for 5 years. And his explanation for that is, well, if we want one, we can buy one. Everyone can buy one at all times. The other explanation is, this is an actual quote, I'd say having the G League has something to do with it. 26 of the, every team has a G League
team. So many G League
teams. Except for three for some reason. It's lunacy. Everybody that's smart takes advantage of the dumb Wizards and the dumb GM, Ernie Grunfeld, who should be fired immediately. And they take advantage and take the second round picks and spin them. Milwaukee just got Nikola Mirotic for a postseason run for some of Ernie's stupid second-round picks that he needed to unload his crappy contracts. He's terrible at this. He's kind of halfway cleaned up his own toxic waste spill and is walking around doing interviews as if he's invented fire. They are not worth your time. They are not worth your time. If you love basketball, find another television program to watch. I love Steve Buckhantz so much. I'm sorry, man. I can't while he's here.
It's not nice to Buckhantz.
I love Steve Buckhantz. I love him. I love him. It's awkward how much I love Steve Buckhantz. Can't do it, man. This is so pathetic.
It's bad. And I just wish once they would give me the opportunity to shower them with some type of positivity. And I thought they were going to. I wanted to at
this
deadline.
The beginning, yeah.
They traded Otto Porter, and I loved it. I really did. I said, thank you. Good job. You got out of that terrible contract. And then they traded Markieff Morris. You can question and argue about what they got back, but I love that too. You're moving money. You're moving players that will not be here the next time you actually have a chance to win a final. Good. This is healthy. This is what I was expecting and hoping years ago would have happened and never did. But then they didn't keep going. And it turns out that the only reason that they did that was to save a couple million bucks in the luxury tax.
This year.
It wasn't so that they could rebuild. It has nothing to do with next year or the year after, according to what Ernie Grunfeld said in a lot of these interviews. And he was on a podcast with Chris Miller, and he talked to Candace Buckner, and he talked to Fred Katz, we had on this week of The Athletic. He made the rounds. But it was the same rhetoric. It was the same stuff. Like, nothing has changed. In the time since he last spoke, they're having a terrible season. They're trying desperately to make the playoffs and still, as of right now, wouldn't qualify to do so in a conference where anyone who gives any effort should make the playoffs. They've lost their franchise player who they're going to pay 4 years of an astronomical amount of money after this year, not just for the remainder of this year, but for all of next year. All of these things have happened, and nothing has changed in terms of the conversation that Grunfeld is having publicly with his fans.
This is a quote to Fred Katz. By giving up the second round pick, we saved a substantial amount of money. and we can use that money to buy a second round pick if someone is available that we like. What? What? What on earth? You go back to the summer of 2016, where they were a team on the rise. They had cap space. They had all sorts of wonderful things available to them. And they basically turned that into whatever this is.
I honestly think when they missed out on Durant, in a way that we didn't properly understand at the time, it completely crippled them. Because they had set themselves up in a pretty good spot to get him, and they did a lot of things well leading up to that. I do give them a lot of credit. They had the money, they had the availability and the flexibility financially. They were in a position they needed to be in to absolutely meet with him at the least. I mean, the fact that he didn't take a meeting is still frustrating. But when he said no, and now they had this money where they had to spend something, they had to – I don't know. Did they have to get to a salary floor?
Yeah, there was
basically
a floor, yes.
So they said, okay, well, now what do? We'll just give money to Andrew Nicholson. Terrible idea. We'll pay Jan Mahimi way more than he's worth. Terrible idea. We'll give Jason Smith a massive contract to be a clapper on the bench who hits a three every couple of days and talks about movies on Twitter. Not a great idea.
Here is the summary. Go back to 2016. And again, it was a noble goal to build the nest and try to entice Kevin Durant to come home. It was the best shot they had to be great. I do not fault them for that. There were decisions along the way that were stupid, selling off first-round picks to get marginally better and not having enough assets, not really being in a good spot for this, but they had the cap space. They had a decent team that was on the rise. Here's what they turned that cap space into.
Is this the tweet from last night?
Yeah.
Who tweeted this? I've been looking for it everywhere.
A guy named Ben Becker,
okay,
who is a big Wizards fan.
I literally just asked Star, who tweeted that last night? Because this was great.
In less than 3 years, the Wizards parlayed a ton of cap space in the summer of 2016 into Bobby Portis's restricted free agent rights, Jan Mahimi, negative five picks, one first rounder and 4 seconds, and a financial crunch causing them to dump Otto Porter, a good player, and a guy that was sold as a core. He was bad before this, talking about Grunfeld. That bungling in 2016 set up all of this stuff. He's so proud that he was able to get Otto Porter and some cap relief. That's not what you're supposed to be doing. How is the team better than they were 10 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago, 2 years ago? They're worse in every facet. Bradley Beal's a better player, and you're running his butt into the ground. He's going to be injured because of the way they're using him. Leading the league in minutes per night, it's asinine. Anybody that is still in that building that thinks we're on the right track, you're a crazy person. You're a crazy person if you think this is the right way to do it.
Some responses coming in on Twitter to the photo of our wallets. Troy says, one of those is a wallet. The other is a stack of cards wrapped in old bootlaces. Mm-hmm, definitely mm-hmm. not a wallet. He's Team Danny on this. Jeffrey says, please tell me you don't put that monstrosity in your back pocket, Danny. He's Team Me. Gylo says he knows what I'm getting for my birthday. We got people coming in that are worried about your health, Danny. Taj says, funny Danny's carrying his whole life in that wallet. Every expired credit card and business card any person has given him since 2002.
My favorite ones are, one's a man's wallet with kids, the other's Grant's. That's that one.
That?
Yeah, someone had that one.
It's certainly not a wallet. I just worry about your back. I worry about your ability to get around.
You should not.
Do you ever put it in your back pocket at all?
Yeah, sure.
You do?
Now,
you sit down?
Yeah, of course. It's a non-issue.
How is that a non-issue to sit on that wallet?
Is.
Someone is asking if you've ever used it as a jack when you've lost a tire.
Right, which is a funny thing, but it's not an issue. I will tell you this, though. Years ago, your boy was in Paris. Okay? Years ago.
France or another Paris?
Not Paris, Texas, which is not as desirable. I was in Paris, France. And I was walking up a stream in a line of people near the Le Tour Eiffel, or Eiffel Tower, walking up towards the subway station, okay, or the whatever you call it. And I'm walking up the stairs, and I just so happened to not have, I was wearing jeans. I had my wallet in my front pocket. And not my back, okay? And there was a pickpocket attempt. And I had a couple things in my back pocket that were nothing of value, but it looked like I had something in there because, you're a tourist, you're just carrying crap. And I didn't realize it until the hand was already gone, and by the time I turned around, whoever it was long gone. That moment said, I will try not to have my wallet in my back pocket anymore because of that. I put it in my front, and I generally, if I walk around in public, have my hand in the same pocket as the wallet to prevent the pickpocketing.
Which I think is very smart. It works out well for you then as well that your wallet couldn't be in your back pocket and you possibly be sitting down at the same time anyway.
It normally would have been, and I would have been in a foreign country without my wallet. And everyone's like, oh, that's not a big deal. To me, it would have been the greatest emergency of my life.
If you were sitting down with your wallet in your back pocket, you would be kind of like on one elbow. You know, you would be like leaned over completely in one direction.
No, I'd just be normal. But to have to like go to the consulate, what is that? Where's the consulate? What are
you talking
about? I
don't know what
that means. People just do those sorts of things?
I wouldn't want to do that. That sounds like the Safe House movie with Denzel and Ryan Reynolds, which is a good film.
Just go to the consulate.
Beltway Blitz at noon. We will win off the field next. You guys got to call us, and not for us, but for Bruce Allen, and tell us what little thing has gone right in your day. At 1 o'clock, we will talk about the NBA trade deadline outside of Washington, some of the other big moves that were made. You're listening to The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Time to figure out how you're winning off the field. If you're new to this segment, where you been? Pretty simple. Bruce Allen, a few years ago at Redskins Park, actually into a working microphone at a press conference with cameras rolling, said that the Redskins may not be a good football team, but that's okay because things are good off the field for the team.
We're winning off the field, but we got to start winning on the field.
So we celebrate that on this show on Fridays at 11:45 by doing a little segment we call Winning Off the Field, where you tell us about the mini moral victories, the tiny things that don't really matter, but something small that's gone great in your day.
We can congratulate you on your big thing. That's cool. Congrats on that. Not for this segment.
Winning on the field.
Thank you very much, Bruce, for the clarification. That's kind of where we're at.
You need an example?
I'm over here stumped. I don't think I quite get it. Can you give people an example?
I'm eating a string cheese right now.
Uh-huh.
And because I'm eating it correctly, pulling strings, not biting it twice like you do,
mm-hmm.
I'm enjoying my string cheese. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
I see that.
My day is better because I have a string cheese.
Winning off the field.
Every day should result in a person eating a string cheese.
Winning off the field.
They're good,
mm-hmm.
aren't they?
Really good. Cold, refreshing.
Coach, what do you think about string cheese?
Yeah.
What? Oh, okay.
I think some got caught like in the back of his throat.
He's trying to like
clear
get
it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sounds a little bit like Fiona the Frenchie trying to get some sleep at night.
What does she sound like?
She does a lot of like, you know, she's French bulldog, so there's some breathing issues from time to time as she moves around. Anytime she's upside down.
Fair to say.
Yeah, I agree. On her back, it's a lot of like, a lot of that.
I forget exactly what kind of weird dog my sister and brother-in-law have, but it's similar that it's small, but it has quote-unquote problems all
Boston
the time.
Boston Terrier?
No, I don't think that's right. It may be some sort of mutt, but French bulldog is like at the core of it.
Can I see a picture?
Maybe I can
find
it.
Is it a pug?
Maybe. Maybe it's that
Ooh,
one. Maybe
pug.
It's that one.
Pugs, definitely.
That sounds right. I think it's a pug
in the same
base.
Genre.
It's the breathing. You know it's coming when it's three rooms away.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like it's ripping snores while it's wide awake. And just this grunt, like a pig on the way to trough. It's
Fiona doesn't make
gross.
Noises walking or running, really. It's just laying down. And it's specifically like a human. I don't know about you. I've never been a big snorer.
Mm-mm.
But the one time I've caught myself snoring will be when I'm laying on my back and like my head is
if you're tilted
perched.
At a certain
exactly.
angle, yeah,
that's I think her deal. Same deal.
I had the rare occasions I've had to share a motel or hotel room with my dad over the course of the years. He's got the one where if he's anywhere near on his back, like if he's sleeps on a slide, sleeps on a stomach, if he approaches the back vector, it sounds like a bear is using a chainsaw. And holding its breath and drowning, it is a horrifying sound.
My brother, who's now lost all this weight with the EMP 180, he's down about 100 pounds.
Yeah.
You've seen him recently. He's unrecognizable.
He's a skinny lad.
It's staggering. So I don't know if this has changed or not. His poor wife. I mean, whenever we would have to like go on trips or whatever for my bachelor party, if someone was sharing a room with him, you're just not sleeping that night. Just an all-nighter. I mean, just so terrible how loud he was when he slept.
There are a lot of things. No.
Sounds like a turkle gobble.
There are a lot of things I can tolerate in my life. I need like whatever the reason snoring is so disruptive is because it's inconsistent. You know what I mean? If it was just a steady sound forever, then I could
get
deal
used
with that.
To it.
Whatever it is, it's the inconsistency, it's the jarring nature of it, like you're almost dying and you pass out. Yeah. I hate snoring.
Enough.
If you snore, you have to be in seclusion.
You're not a snorer? I would think you're a snorer.
No.
Not at all.
I mean, I have. Like, when I'm stuffed up or, like, I'm on my back at a certain angle, I have snored. I'm not one of those guys who goes, I never do. I have.
Do you think most of our listeners are surprised to find out you and I don't actually sleep together?
Yes.
Don't you think?
They think we share a house.
Like, wait a second. You don't know if Danny's a snorer? You don't hear him at night? They literally think we live together.
Yeah.
Like, it never ceases to amaze me when we're at an event, someone will be like, where's Danny? That's a reasonable time to ask. He's not here today.
Multiple states away.
I was at dinner at, might have been like Mike's American Grill or something, with my wife and her two parents. I'm like, yeah, this is my wife and this is her parents. They're like, oh, where's Danny? Didn't make it out tonight. Wasn't a party of five. Just me, Danny, my wife, and her parents.
I'm sure it'd be a wonderful experience to eat with.
You'd love it.
You're in laws. But can you imagine the idea that that's what's supposed to happen?
I can, because it's regularly brought up. Let's go to Ed in Arlington on the Fan. Ed, how are you winning off the field?
The other day, I went over to my brother-in-law's place, and my youngest nephew shows me some artwork that he drew, you know, and he was so proud of it. And all I said to him was, you know, I used to draw like crap when I was a kid, too.
Oh, no.
So my brother-in-law texts me later that night like, yo, you dick, this is like the one thing that's going well for my son here. And I was like, oh, man, I was beating myself up. So the next day I invite my nephew out to go have some Vietnamese. And we have a great time. We're talking about how grateful we are to have each other in our lives. And now my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law are calling me, asking, like, how's he doing in school? Let me give you a credit card so you can take him out to dinner again. They're loving me. And for that, I am.
Winning off the field?
Sounds like a Full House episode.
Yeah. You...
Uncle Jesse accidentally offended Stephanie, and then at the end of the episode takes her out for a nice meal and they hug right before the credits.
I don't know what age you can give legitimate criticism to an art project for a kid. I know that my son's not there yet, because we're still in the encouraging phase. I don't want him to
collectibles
thinking he's the most special snowflake of all time, but I'm not ready to be like, you know, the Home shading court here outside the line really sucks, son.
Let's go to Rich and Olney. Hey, buddy.
Richard.
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Good, buddy.
Great.
So my new favorite craft beer spot, Brew Belly and Olney, they just got a full liquor bar. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the
Therefore,
field.
Therefore, you are a regular, I believe is what we're going to call it, Rich. You're going to frequent that joint, and I'm happy for you, my friend. Maddie in Stafford, what do you got?
Matthias.
Hey, Fauquier County is wide open, people. Reach the global business world and still see the mountains. But how does my phone reception sound today?
Sounds great.
Sounds very
Matt.
Good.
I've never heard it sound better.
Crystal.
I'm calling from my house, and the phone reception is silly. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
That's a good one. Most people have to, like, hunt around. They're like,
you find the spot.
I can't text. I'm in my basement. You're not going to get it. I can't make the call. I'm in the weird soft spot in the upstairs living room near the bed.
So when I, like, if I've got to come back on the station later, like, do a phoner, I've got to do it from a certain area in my room where the reception's better, as opposed to, like, my living room
and
or
not
like, the
move
kitchen.
Anywhere.
Yeah, it's annoying.
Beltway Blitz at noon. Darius Geis making his way back. Adrian Peterson trying to get a contract. We'll sort out the Redskins running back situation in the 12 o'clock hour as well. Plus, have you guys seen some of the legislation changes that might come to Major League Baseball? Some ideas on some rule changes in baseball. We'll run through them and see what we like and dislike on Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it.
I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.